This is the Tame Aperture Podcast.
Open the pod bay doors, please, Hal.
Hello, Hal, do you read me?
Do you read me, Hal? Do you read me, Hal?
Affirmative, Dave. I read you. I read you. I read you.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
Come on down and jump some of this shit.
You'll always have that. Sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
Welcome to the Tame Aperture Podcast, where we talk about all things movies from first-time directors, indie films, art house, and much, much more. Today, we're talking about the 2015 comedy, The Night Before, written and directed by Jonathan Levine. It stars Seth Rogen, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Anthony Mackie. The IMDb logline reads, on Christmas Eve, three lifelong friends spend the night in New York City looking for the holy grail of Christmas parties. I'm Alan Martindale, editor, filmmaker, and along for the ride, as always, is our fearless leader, Gabe Wienendahl, filmmaker, film instructor, and film evangelist. Gabe, how the hell are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. It's Christmas time.
Merry Christmas.
Yay!
Ho, 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 ho. That was enthusiastic. Now I'm ready to celebrate. Let's do this.
Well, that's good because I thought of you and I thought, oh, this is a stoner comedy. I feel like this is right up your alley and now you might throw me for a loop. I'm getting nervous.
I might throw you for a loop. Before we get into it, as always, heavy spoilers. So go watch the movie The Night Before. I watched it on Tubi, so it was interrupted by ad breaks, but it was free. So
you cheap ass.
I am a cheap ass. Did you rent it?
Yeah, I own it on Vudu.
On Vudu?
On Vudu.
What the hell is Vudu?
Look it up, everybody. It's a real thing.
There are two... Okay, that's a rant I could go on. There are too many streaming things, man.
Yes.
I've lost track.
Well, I stopped like half of mine over the last 6 months.
I'm trying to. It's hard.
I stopped Apple TV.
Really? Oh, you haven't seen...
So I haven't seen Pluribus.
I haven't either. I'm waiting till they all come out.
Exactly. And then I'm going to resubscribe. Yeah. And I've yet to watch Severance Season 2.
Oh, dude.
And I'm a huge... I've watched Season 1 two times. So I think this holiday season, outside of The Night Before, I'll be watching me some Apple TV on a 30-day trial.
It's the best thing to do, man. It really is. Like... get it for 30 days, whatever streaming service, binge all the shit you want to watch, and then get rid of it.
I think with Apple, too, you could put it on pause.
Good.
Like, I think, I don't know if you can do that with all streaming services, but I think with Apple, you can just pause it, which I didn't know until now. And so next time, I'm just going to pause it when I'm done.
That's the way to go.
After I binge it all.
That's the way. I know. I just re-signed up for Paramount Plus, and they did not give me the free trial.
Well, Paramount is a whole nother story.
Dude, I don't even want to get into it.
Never signed in, or never signed up, never will.
It's garbage, too. There's nothing other than South Park and Beavis and Butthead.
It's got Beavis and Butthead.
And South Park, and those are really the only things worth watching on that whole service.
Aren't they trying to buy WB now? Isn't that the deal?
Netflix is trying to buy WB, and then Paramount's coming in with a hostile bid.
That's what I mean. They came in with another... $10 or $20 billion.
Maybe this is what we should be doing, is we should be doing movie news.
No one's gonna listen.
Exactly. We're already boring people. But let's get into this one. So it's a Christmas movie. It's a comedy. How do you feel about Seth Rogen in general?
Okay, before I answer that question, we have to do a Christmas holiday special. The last one we did has been a few years ago.
It's true.
The last one we did that I can recollect is our episode 45, which was a Bad Santa. We actually did Bad Santa 2.
Yep.
And it was episode 59, excuse me. Episode 59, Bad Santa 2. We did this 4 years ago, Alan.
4 years. Okay.
So we had to do another Christmas special. And so it's not really that far back. If you don't like A Night Before, or if this podcast in this episode ends up being complete shit, go back to episode 59 on the website, because that one actually is really good. So we had to do a Christmas special. We had to do a holiday special.
We had to. And honestly, I almost think we should revisit the original Bad Santa, because if I remember right, when we did the first Bad Santa, we watched two different cuts.
We did.
And
you watched the
theatrical cut, which is way better.
Which is way better. And I watched whatever
the director's cut. And we were surprised because usually the director's cut's always better. And it's so much worse.
You would think those would have been swapped.
Yeah.
Where the theatrical cut was worse and the director's cut was better. Not the case with Bad Santa.
So maybe next year we revisit it and do a proper one, because to me, that is by far, hands down, my favorite Christmas movie of all time.
It's a good movie. I think we both gave it high ratings. You probably higher than me. But to answer your question, how do I feel about Seth Rogen? Here's the thing about Seth Rogen. He's hit or miss. I think he's exceptionally funny. Most recently, I watched him in The Studio on Apple TV before I ended my subscription. And I thought he was great. I thought that was a fun, intelligent, smart, creative, exciting, and a bit campy representation of the film world. I thought it was cool. So I like him in that. There's other movies that he's Seth Rogen, and you're going to get some Rogen. In this film, I really like him.
Okay.
Because he's definitely Seth Rogen, and you're going to get that. And I say this is a stoner comedy holiday special. It's really just him who's the stoner.
Of course.
But I guess his friends are still on the hunt for weed, so maybe they're stoners too. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it when you said Seth Rogen's hit or miss. That's exactly how I would put it. And I'm not going to lie. After The Studio, I love that so much that I was like, maybe I was wrong about him. Like, maybe he is pretty funny. And then I saw this and I'm like, eh. Meh.
Oh, come on.
This is what I remember him being. Like, it's not bad, but it's like, eh. I get it. He's on drugs. That's funny, I guess. To me, what I liked about this, the parts I liked about this movie were when they weren't trying to be funny. I there was only one part I laughed at in the whole film.
One part?
One
part. I gotta hear what this part is.
It was when they're having dinner with the football player's mom, and Seth Rogen looks over at her, and she's got tentacles for arms because he's tripping on mushrooms. To me, that was literally the only part I think I laughed at the whole movie.
So I'm going to take a different position. This is an underrated alternative Christmas movie.
I think, you know what? I think this is the first time we're actually going to see totally different.
This is a totally underrated holiday Christmas movie.
Okay. I gotta
hear you
out.
You have to name something, and for your sake, I have to exclude Bad Santa.
Okay.
You'd have to name something that has the elements that this does that's kind of got that rated R, raunchy, but relatable. That's the thing. It's raunchy, but it's relatable. There's friends. Some are growing in their life. Some aren't. You're figuring it out. So I would be interested to hear, outside of Bad Santa, where you would find another movie that kind of hits something like this.
That is a good question. I'd have to think about it. First of all, I will preface it with this. I'm not a huge fan of Christmas movies, but I know that.
Freaking Grinch.
I am. I totally am. I get it. And I will fully admit it and own it. But going into this, I told myself, you know what? It's going to be a Christmas movie. There's going to be some corny ass shit. Just deal with it. Like, just know that going in and accept it. And I did. And actually, the corny ass shit was the stuff I liked. That was the stuff I enjoyed the most. Like, Bad Santa, the reason why I love that movie so much is because it has a lot of heart towards the end with the kid.
Okay, now I'll push back a little here. This movie also has a lot of heart.
And that's what I liked about it. That's the only thing I liked about it. Seriously. Like, I love the storyline of Joseph Gordon-Levitt, his character Ethan. That, to me, like, I almost teared up, man, when they're reliving his first Christmas after his parents got killed. And he's like, to me, I almost teared up. I was like, that is emotionally touching. And it gives you a lot of insight. And I love that. And I love the idea of, like, these two guys are his only family, and his whole arc is he's got to get past that, and he's got to grow and understand that you got to move on. To me, I love that. I love that storyline. But it's like, oh, wait, now Seth Rogen ate a bunch of ecstasy. Oh!
Alan, you're hating, dude.
I'm trying. So
I mean,
so hard.
You're not wrong. That's what I that's why I call it underrated, because if I look at it, I go, oh, the heart is obviously the thing that's keeping the momentum of the interest going on. I get that. And in his story arc with Joseph Gordon-Levitt's character, Ethan, it's like, yes, that makes a lot of sense. This is a guy who went through some serious trauma and his friends are coming in to help him out. And then they reach a point in their lives where they've grown and evolved into something else. And that's a pretty cool note on friendship too. I mean, the reality is if you look at it, friendships grow and evolve and they change. Yep. And over time, they're not what they were, but that's okay. And then you figure out how to navigate it, you know?
Yep.
And I love that element of it. The stuff with Seth Rogen was hilarious because here's the thing. It's not just about him. Here's where I'm going to come in with a little bit of counterpoint. It's not just to him getting high on drugs, although that's funny. It's his underlying fear of becoming a father.
I wish they would have leaned into that more.
They do a little bit. They could have leaned into it maybe more in spots, but that's really where it stems. And then the comedy now is all over the place. But it's stemming from the idea that his wife's pregnant and this is his first baby. And she tells him, hey, you've been my rock and you're the best and you're all these things. And he just plays it like he is the rock and he is the stable piece. And in his mind, he's going insane because he's freaking out about having a kid. And her way of showing him her love for him is to give a box of drugs to go enjoy the night. And all the drugs do, and it's funny to me, there's funny elements to it. We'll get into some of those scenes. But those drugs now just enhance the fear that he has of becoming a father.
Exactly. And I will say, from what I've heard, this is definitely not from any personal experience, but from what I have heard, the way he portrayed kind of the fear while he was on mushrooms was pretty fucking spot on to him. Like that made me be like, oh, it's that that feeling is just awful. Like a bad trip, man. From what I've heard.
This is an alleged.
Alleged.
Yes.
I wouldn't know for sure.
For sure.
But to me, I did like that. I would have liked to seen more of the heart there, or the heart of Anthony Mackie, who plays football player Chris Roberts. That was kind of like an afterthought with the steroid thing. They should have explored that a little bit.
This is where I agree. I think first off, the chemistry between the actors to me is great. I would believe them to all be friends. I look at Joseph Gordon-Levitt, Seth Rogen. I could see them actually hanging out in real life. So the chemistry was there. I do think the storyline strength was obviously within the main character, which is great because that's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Followed by Seth Rogen. I think Anthony Mackie's character story was a little bit, it was like a second thought.
Yes.
It was like,
yeah.
He's an athlete.
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, you can still make it a comedy, but it was, I couldn't tell if they wanted it to be, because it is classified as a comedy/drama. And I couldn't tell if they wanted it to be a real like, not coming of age, but real like growing up, growing pains of getting older. You're in your mid-30s, your life's not the same. Like, explore that drama, or if they wanted it to be like a raunchy comedy. Because to me, it wasn't even that raunchy, honestly.
There's some irreverent parts, I would say. I agree. I don't think that it was overly raunchy. The scene with Seth Rogen in the Catholic Church.
That was fantastic.
Was absolutely legendary.
That was fantastic. I wouldn't go legendary, but I loved it.
It's pretty legendary.
I loved it.
When he's high on weed and he's...
he's high on mushrooms.
Mushrooms. Let's talk about what he's high on.
At this point in the movie, mushrooms, cocaine, alcohol, and weed.
And Molly.
Molly, I think, was later.
Oh, okay, later?
You
might be right.
I don't know. But yeah. Molly, which is ecstasy. So basically, but the part where he's like walking into the church and he puts the little stick down, and it's like, it to me, that's gold. That's experience right there. That dude has experienced something similar.
Well, and it's funny too, because he's met up with his wife, and in the Catholic Church, he's wearing a Star of David sweater. I mean, that's pretty funny. And I feel like that, I say legendary because I feel like that's pretty bold to now talk about these two things that could be contrary and probably controversial in a lot of ways in cultural realm,
for
and
sure.
societal realm and religious realm, and be able to go, we're going to mesh these together and
for
make
sure.
it funny.
For sure. Know? I want to talk about the best part of the movie as far as I'm concerned. Michael Shannon.
Oh, yeah.
As I mean, Mr. Green, as the drug dealer. Like, I could not... If you would have said Michael Shannon is going to play a drug dealer, I would have been like, that's terrible casting. But he was fantastic. Like, I just got done watching Death by Lightning on Netflix, which is about... He plays James Garfield. James Garfield, I think? The president. James Garfield.
Yeah.
Who was assassinated like 3 months into his...
You could say anything you want. I'd be like, Grover?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
I have no idea. But James Garfield, yes. I am not a historian by any means.
And it, like, he is...
he's a great actor.
He's so good. And that's kind of a prestigious role where he's playing a really prestigious character. And, like, then to see him just be a drug dealer, but a wise drug dealer. Like, James Garfield, yeah, that's his name. That was the president's name that I should know. The president of the United States. That's our history. I should know this stuff. But it was just going from that to this... And he is just nails it. He's so good. I loved it. He's my favorite part of the whole movie.
I mean, let's say that he's not just a drug dealer. First off, did they set it up that where he's the former drug dealer of when they were in high school?
Yep.
So Mr. Green is his name, I think.
Yep.
And they like this is someone they're familiar with after 10 plus years of being graduated from high school. And so they know who he is. That's the one who supplied him weed. I think he's not just a drug dealer, though. He's an angel.
That's fucking stupid, man.
I loved it.
They lost me on that. I loved it because I love the
absurdity of it. And once again, Alan, this is a commentary on elements of religion.
True.
This could be a commentary where now you could dive into this, and I don't want to get overly... analytical necessarily and get, you know, super intense on it. But I think that it's interesting to have those two things live in the same world where you're like, you got this angel and this religion thing. And then we're talking about drugs, which is anti-religion in a lot of ways, obviously, and how they mesh together. So he's the guy to do it. I mean, Michael Shannon's like the perfect actor to do that. And I thought the absurdity of it was funny.
Yeah.
At the end when he gets the wings.
They ruined it, man. The character was just like, oh, God.
The absurdity. He's an archangel.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. An archangel dealing drugs to kids in New York City. Come on, dude. If I came to you, Alan, with a pitch of a movie and I told you an archangel is going to deal drugs to a bunch of kids in New York City, you might go, tell me more.
I would, if that's the plot of the movie, but it wasn't the plot of the movie.
I loved it.
Yeah, I mean, I thought that was stupid, but I just, any scene he was in, I thought he was fantastic. Like, just his weirdness in the car, when he's sitting in the car dealing to these guys, and just, he's just fantastic. You know, anything he does is going to be amazing. I thought, okay, let's talk about this for a second. So they build up this whole, the whole point of the fucking movie is, They have a tradition. Every Christmas, they go out. They get drunk rather than spending time with their family because Joseph Gordon-Levitt doesn't have a family anymore. And they've been doing it for like 14 years. And the whole point is for them to find this this legendary party that you have to have a specific invitation for. And this is the whole plot of the movie. And it's called the Nutcracker Ball. And they stumble onto some tickets. Joseph Gordon-Levitt steal some tickets, and so you're expecting it to be just the most amazing party ever. And then they just walk in, and it's just like a bar. It's just like a club. I was just like, this is it, huh? This is the mage. This is the whole thing.
Well, let's not forget this, where we're going to differ.
We're going to go to blows on this one.
It wasn't just a... Dude, James Franco's there. Miley Cyrus is singing. And Ethan proposes to his girlfriend that he's been pursuing the whole time.
That's true.
Though, so there's a lot of shit going down.
There's a lot of shit going down, but that's the legendary party that everyone talks about every year. It's super secret and super amazing, and everyone can't wait to get in. Like, that's it. That's it. Like,
you tell me what would be okay in 2015? Now let's put it in context. Let's get ourselves in the minds of the writers.
Okay.
Okay, it's 2015. What is legendary in 2015? Miley Cyrus is probably as big as ever.
Sure.
James Franco's is probably almost as big as ever.
Yep.
So in the writing, it's more contemporary, but I'm saying what would be, I agree with you. I think there's probably more legendary things, but I'm saying in the moment, those are too big.
For sure.
Who could we replace it with?
Well, this is one thing I was confused about. So James Franco's character's name is James. Was he playing James Franco?
Yes.
He was playing himself.
That's what I thought.
Okay. Because I think they should have leaned into that more. But the whole part, okay, I will say this. I got to admit this. Seth Rogen gets his phone switched with Mindy Kaling or whatever her name is, that chick from The Office.
Mindy Kaling.
Kaling, yeah. So they get their phones switched, and her phone is getting blown up with dick pics from a guy named James. And I will say, that whole sequence.
Come on, that whole thing's funny.
When Seth Rogen, he thinks it's his
phone.
When
it comes back, when they introduce it and you're unsure, and then when he gets the phone and swaps it, and it's James Franco, come on, that's funny.
No, that is funny.
That's good payoff.
But as he's responding, because he thinks it's his phone, he's like, who's James? Like, I don't know who this guy is. And the way he's responding is just, that was comedy gold. Like, that was great.
The whole scene
that.
Where he's trying to figure, he's almost a little bit obsessed with his James character in a weird way.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Like, that was funny. I don't know what would be more legendary, but you know what this movie is?
No, we're not moving on. I need you to tell me. Because I'm getting in the mind of the writers. So James Franco, Miley Cyrus, big in 2015,
right?
2014, whenever they're writing it, that makes sense. But if you were really, if you, Alan, were ready to make the Nutcracker Ball, who would need to be there to make it legendary?
Oh, you know what? That's a good question. But it would not be like two celebrities. It would be every room has a bunch of celebrities, and they're all doing their cool shit. I don't know what that is, but I would make it over the top fucking big, because this is just all this is like a bad New Year's Eve concert at a, you know, that's all this is. And this is, they built it up to be some legendary party. And I thought that was kind of lazy.
You can't do that throughout the whole movie. I mean, you can't, like, cause I like your idea, by the way, that sounds pretty fun. Every room has its own theme.
Yeah. There you go.
Across the board. And there's legends in every room.
Dude, we should remake this movie. We could do a better job.
I couldn't, but because I think this movie's pretty fucking awesome.
I think we could, for sure. But do you know what this movie is? This movie is if a Super Bowl commercial with celebrities was a movie.
No, it's not.
There's no substance. It's just a bunch of cameos. Now, like, what is Tracy Morgan? What the? He wasn't even funny.
It's all about the evolution of friendship and moving on with life and figuring out how to navigate those things when they come your way. If I do that with just pure drama, then it could be fucking boring and nobody's going to watch a Christmas
movie. Good point. I still think you can do it and be funny. I'm fully well aware I'm going to get a lot of shit for this, because people give me shit for this all the time. I hate the movie Elf. I hate it with a passion. I think it is a terrible movie. I don't like Will Ferrell in it. I think it's stupid all the way around. And I'm sorry if you like it. I'm not insulting you. It's not my thing, right? And I think this was like a grown-up Elf, is what it felt like to me.
No. Stop being dishonest. Because I'll be honest with you. I like Elf,
mm-hmm.
but I do actually see where you're coming from. And I actually don't. Here's the difference. I get it. He doesn't like Elf.
Right.
Like, I get that.
Right. It's just not for me, right?
Like, but
it's
this one, I'm like, I don't get it. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, I've said I don't want to beat a dead horse, but the parts I liked about the movie was when it had heart and when the storytelling was strong. I think that's what I feel like was missing. Like, it doesn't have to lean into the drama. Just don't give up on the storytelling to show a silly face on Seth Rogen's face, you know? Like,
give
me a joke in context.
I'll give you one. Do you want it? He's on drugs, which he was provided by his wife, which is a comical.
That
I think that's funny. go have a nice night with your friends and enjoy yourself.
Great premise.
Which is great.
Yeah.
You can't tell me that then when he does and he drips blood inside a cocktail, it's not funny.
I thought something else was going to happen with
that.
Well,
he drips blood in the cocktail because he took cocaine in the bathroom.
Yeah.
He was trying to take his wife's advice and enjoy his night. Now, here's the other thing. Now, this is the craziness of storytelling and screenwriting. This is where it's fun to kind of put ourselves back in the minds of screenwriters, because for me, like, would never do that. My point being, like, that's funny. There is context there.
For sure.
They set it up. She's given him the drugs and the permission to use them. And then he hits a line, and then stuff like that where his nose starts bleeding and he's having a conversation. And then they swap the phones and you start seeing the text from the James stuff. And I don't know. There's just a lot of stuff in here that I think needs to be unpacked. And I just think you're hating on the movie.
I kind of am. I'm not going to lie. I kind of am. I will say.
And guess what? I love it. You should. If you don't like it.
They did do one effect. So I try not to get wrapped up in nostalgia too much. I think it's a cheap way to do it. But
I already know where you're going.
You know where I'm going. They got me with one nostalgia thing that I never hear anybody talk about ever. And that's when they wanted to go play GoldenEye on the Nintendo 64.
That was not the one I was expecting. And I'm actually glad that's the one you said. Because that actually makes 100. That's beautiful. I thought you were going to get nostalgic about the Christmas movie references, which for me is, but I didn't like those, which is crazy.
Yeah, I wasn't a fan of those either.
Like the Home Alone stuff with the micro machines, Anthony Mackie's character meets, I'll call her a Grinch.
Totally.
That's what she
totally.
Is. Totally. And then she has all these, like, booby traps.
You know what her character's name is?
Yeah.
Rebecca Grinch.
Oh, I didn't. Okay.
Because she says she's a Grinch.
Oh, she does say that. So, yeah. But then she has all these, like, movie references and these booby traps.
She's got her hand taped up like the Sticky Bandits in Home Alone 2.
Yes. And the micro machines when they all come around the street corner, like Home Alone.
Yep.
Which is kind of funny, but also just in the context of this movie, just didn't land.
Exactly. Like, even the part where they're doing the thing from Big at the toy store on the big piano.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it really lost me with all the singing stuff. Like, it was just like, oh, dude, come, like, I don't.
Like, and I was like, don't brighten my day with songs.
I'm trying to hate this movie. Please stop making me feel things.
I mean, I get that. I mean, it was kind of still funny, though, even though it played like Kanye and they didn't do the big, you know, chopsticks.
Yeah.
But
even the karaoke thing, and then, like, when they're singing to the baby at the end, I'm just like, let's not do this, please. Can we just...
I mean, I get that, but also because I'm such a nerd and I love hip hop, all of those ones kind of resonated.
At least it was Run DMC.
It was Run DMC. I get it, but Run DMC at the end was a little much for me. But also, it's an opportunity for them to, like, you know, move forward. They're like, oh, we're all going to sing our friends. First off, I would never do that. Would you do that?
Do what?
Serenade your friend's baby to sleep?
No. No, no one would do that. That's not a thing. Like, that's the thing. Like, I didn't love the angel part with Michael Shannon getting wings, but I can put up with that. I could put up with the karaoke. I could put up with all the coincidences and all the other shit. I will not suspend my disbelief long enough to believe that anyone is going to go into the baby's room with two friends and sing it to sleep. That's fucking bullshit. Get out of my face with that. I will not put up with that.
Wasn't it just a nod to the previous karaoke thing?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's all it was.
I can't believe we're this diametrically opposed on this film.
I mean, look, I think you're wrong.
So you think this is a sleeper? You think that more people need to know about this?
I actually do. And I actually saw this, and maybe it's nostalgic too. And that's the beauty for me about movies. In 2015, that's when this came out. I want to say in November, In 2015, now, maybe that's part of it, was that a month prior in October, I had moved from where I'm at now to LA. And at the time I had to do, it was a change. And I'm not trying to get overly personal, but maybe that's part of why I connected with the movie in some sense. And there's nostalgia to it, but I had to move to LA and I remember seeing this movie in the theater across the street from where I worked in November. So it was within that month time frame where I had just moved, and then I saw, and then so there's, it's like evolution of change,
yeah,
and like family and like all these, it was, and so maybe it just like embedded a little like microchip in my head and was like, oh yeah, that's why you like this, because in essence, even with all the stuff we've talked about, that's what the movie's about, and the evolution of friendships, yep, and relationships and how things change. And sometimes it's really hard when they change, and it's okay to feel that and then move on and figure out how to navigate it forward.
Agreed.
And so anyway, not to get overly sentimental, but that actually could be a piece to why I like this so much, because it does. That's part of the story of what this is.
Well, think about it. At the time, I mean, these characters were in their mid-30s. We were in our mid-30s.
Like, it would have lined up perfect.
Ago. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it really is. And that is a thing that not many people do talk about. And that's why I really did love elements of the storytelling here, is that there is this time period. Like, everyone talks about, you know, you graduate high school and then everyone goes off and that can be a transition time. But no one really talks about, I think it happened earlier, like for our parents' generations and earlier generations, but I think around mid-30s is when things kind of changed for our generation, where friends kind of, you start to grow apart a little bit, and some people are starting lives.
And,
yeah. And some people have family, some don't.
Kids,
and it's,
yeah.
And you do, but there was a line in there that said, it's hard to stay friends when you get older, because you have so much of your own shit going on. And it is so true. And that doesn't really end, that just keeps going. And I love that message, because it's absolutely true. And I do think that is kind of a time period that people don't really talk about. Like, there aren't many movies about change in your mid-30s, you know, like at all. And it's a big thing.
That's a good point. Anyway, maybe some of that's, I would go even further to say that's what's cool to me. You know, a lot of times we're breaking down movies and we're talking about story and cinematography and character development, and we're talking, you know what I mean? Like,
yep,
the feel, but we're not actually putting ourselves into what we felt when we watched it at the time and how that might have impacted me or us. And it's almost like when you hear a good song,
yes,
that you just resonate with.
Yes.
And you, even if the song's not great, like the song in the, we'll call it the mass, in the popular culture, everyone's like, it's fine, it's not good. But for you, it resonates.
Yep, yep. Agreed.
And it fucking like hits.
Agreed.
That's what this kind of did, just based on, but it's based on your own time period and that, yep, timeline you're on and the feelings that you're going through, and then it hits somehow and it resonates and then you move on.
Yep.
So you just shit on a movie that I love and...
That means I hate you, basically.
And Alan hates my guts.
That's what it means.
We've been doing a podcast for 6 years that, you know,
this is the one that, that is, you're like, no more, I'm done.
It's over.
One thing I will say, you can definitely tell what era it was filmed in by the lighting of this thing. Like, just the overhead lighting.
Wait, hold on.
I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying it's a product of its
era. I go
era.
Through this whole thing about talking about the deeper meaning of movies and how they can attach to a timeline in your own life. And all we ever talk about is like the technical shit. And then Alan comes in with like, the lighting sucks ass.
I don't even think it sucked ass. It's just product of its time. But no, I think, no, you're right. You're absolutely right. And this is,
I agree.
This
I
is one thing I love about doing this podcast. Even if no one listened to it, I would want to do it, this podcast, because there aren't many people in my life where I can nerd out about movies and what they mean to me, you
100%.
Know? And so like, you never have to like explain yourself when you're talking about like, this movie means a lot to me. Even if I think it sucks, I get that. And that's what I love about film. And that's what I love about...
I mean, it's fine. Our friendship's probably over.
I've done way too much damage tonight.
None. You know I'm totally being sarcastic. Can we talk about Joseph Gordon-Levitt?
Yeah.
What do you have to say? We know Michael Shannon is great, and he is really a highlight in this film. But thoughts just in general, but also, maybe about this, like Joseph Gordon-Levitt for you.
I thought all of the acting was great.
Okay.
Even Miley Cyrus, you know, like I thought the acting was really solid. And as much as I'm shitting on it, I thought Joseph Gordon-Levitt was really good. I didn't like the singing parts. Like it takes me out of it. But
you wanted less karaoke.
Yeah. But that's not his fault, you know. But I thought he was really good. I thought Seth Rogen was really good.
Which, what does that mean for you? If you say Seth Rogen's good, because we talked hit and miss, but is that saying a lot then? Because that means you like the movie, and I just...
You said you like the acting, you like the movie.
I'm kidding.
Can't take it back. Yeah, I just, I mean, to me, I don't know how to judge acting. I just know if I believe it, if I believe their performance, I think it's good. And I think he really gave a lot in a lot of weird situations. And I thought he played that range of different drugs on a short amount of time. I thought he played that very well.
I also think, though, like, I think he goes uncredited here. And I was talking about how he's hit or miss. But, like, you look at other stuff he's in, he is good at, for me at least. I mean, we know he's going to play the stoner role. That's kind of his thing, both in real life and probably... you know, but he's really good to me about like how to draw out some form of like sympathy.
Yeah.
Like if he's going to be a dad and you're like, oh, I totally believe he's going to be a dad and he's very nervous.
Yep.
Or like in the studio when he's like the studio executive that wants this big thing and he gets nervous about something and he wants it to work.
It's like, what I would be like if I was a studio executive.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, there is an element that he's really good at like drawing out that relatability.
He's a likable, relatable guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
yeah,
and
I
would say Joseph Gordon-Levitt's a phenomenal actor, actually. I would put him in a pretty high league, just in general. I think he's a really good actor.
I can't think of anything I've ever seen of him where I'm like, eh.
I saw he wrote and directed a Sundance film years ago called Don John.
Oh, yeah. I saw that one.
And he wrote and directed that, and I thought that was a great film.
Like, it was.
Really well put together indie film. And,
yep.
Yeah, he's I don't know. I thought he's great, and I just think their chemistry altogether was nice.
Yeah. And James Franco, like, I loved his little cameo. Like,
did he get canceled, by the way?
I think he did.
I'm not really. Did he get canceled because of, like, sexual allegations?
Yeah. Like, and I don't know. And I'm not going to dive into the whole cancel culture thing. I think a lot of it's overplayed. From what I've heard, this one's probably deserved, but I don't know. So I'm going to just not.
We'll leave James to him.
Yeah. But by the way, I mean, this is a total side note. His brother, Dave, in the studio. Fucking amazing.
Fantastic.
Like one of the best cameo performances I've ever
seen in
my life. Although
I did just see Now You See Me, and he totally phoned that shit in.
Did he?
Oh, yeah.
Bummer.
I mean, he's a great actor.
Right.
But that movie sucked.
The new one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I actually really liked the very first one.
I did too. It was good.
The most recent one, Now You See Me, Now You Don't?
Yeah.
Trash.
Okay.
They phoned it in.
Well,
they phoned it in.
I'm going to pull a Saltburn. I'm going to make you watch that one for the next one.
I will not. <Just kidding. laughs> I will refuse.
Okay, are we ready to do some reviews?
Let's do it.
Okay. One of our favorite things to do on this show, if you're new, is to read reviews online of what people thought of the movie we're covering. And this one's fantastic. There are some real winners on this one.
That's good to know, by the way. Now, are you only reading the bad ones or the good ones?
I usually go straight for the bad ones, but there are some good ones that are...
Read the bad ones.
I got to keep them short. So there are a couple that speak to me.
Our philosophy should be that they're T-shirts. We could make these into T-shirts.
I think I'm going to start doing that. And then, like, when we get off our ass one time, we'll make a store online. You can actually purchase them.
I love it.
And, yeah. So, but here's one that really spoke to me. It's 3.5 stars, and it says... Michael Shannon is probably the greatest human to ever grace the earth. I kind of agree with that one.
I would buy that T-shirt.
I would, too. I think that's great.
But he's not human in this movie.
He's not human. That's true.
He's an angel.
Another one, 2.5 stars. How is Michael Shannon in every single movie? That's a good point. Because he's the greatest human to ever grace the earth.
I think we should. That T-shirt might sell.
I think that one would. We got to put his face on there or something. Maybe that's what we do. I like it. Okay. I'm going to get to work on that one. Half star. This is on Letterboxd. It just says, this was a mistake.
Wait, does it have a handle? I need to know the name.
The name is just Ange, A-N-J.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's fantastic.
That could be anybody. They're wrong. That's fine, though.
I agree. I think they are wrong. I don't think it was a mistake. Another half star from Bone Basher 11 made it 45 seconds before turning it off. Only tried it for Joseph Gordon-Levitt, TBH. Okay. This is probably my favorite. This is definitely my favorite one. Half star from John LOL. We all deserve to die.
You got me there, John. I like this movie, but that was a good one.
That was a good one. And then another half star. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the headline says, and this is from Finley on Film. From this point forward, I vow to acquire and destroy any copy of this film that crosses my path. If I were watching this in the theater, I would have gotten my money back. Hell, I may have robbed the place to get even.
Oh, my God. I got one. Okay, I'm going to go the other direction.
Okay, yes,
as you
please
know,
do.
I'm basically foreshadowing my rating. This is from Jordan on Letterboxd. 4 stars. And Letterboxd is 5, if I'm not mistaken. Or is it 4?
I think it's 5.
Okay, so 4 out of 5. This is a t-shirt. I'll say this much. Every Christmas movie needs a dragon.
I love that. That's a great one. Holy shit.
That's a good t-shirt. I wore a Christmas shirt. Okay, we're talking about shirts. I wore a Christmas shirt here. Let's see if Alan can guess my shirt. Obviously, you're listening. It says the following: Nakatomi Corporation, Christmas Party 88.
Come on, Die Hard.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah.
If you didn't know, then the podcast would be over.
Yeah, and you know what? That would be deservedly so, because that's a classic. But we are at that time of year where everyone's like, is Die Hard a Christmas movie or not? Yes, it's a Christmas movie.
It's a Christmas movie,
of course
for sure.
It is, yeah. I mean, I guess it comes down to us now, right?
Here it is. Put the Wild West music on. It's a showdown. For those of you listening, I'm just staring Alan down like Clint Eastwood in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
He is. Okay, let's do this. Let's guess what each other... we don't have to choose, like, the thing, but let's choose how many. I'm going to guess for you, you're going to go 7.9. Is that it? Did I get it?
7.5.
Holy shit. Okay, I was close.
Okay, for you, and then we'll put the themes on them.
Okay.
So you got me at 7.9. I actually came in at 7.5. That was pretty damn close.
Yeah.
For Alan, I'm going to go 4.8.
Oh, no. Nope. You're way low, man. I'm 6.0 mushroom caps.
I'm
6.0.
I'm 7.5 Michael Shannons.
I mean, overall, it's a Christmas movie. I don't think it's a bad Christmas movie to watch this time of year. I think there are way more worse movies that people watch every single year.
Let me ask you this. We look at rewatchability. What's your rewatchability on this movie?
Oh, shit. You might have me here, because now that I know what it is, I wouldn't mind rewatching it at some point in the future. Not next year. I wouldn't mind rewatching it, just knowing what I'm going to get. Because I just don't like Christmas movies, but I do want to watch Christmas movies. I just don't like a lot of them. So this is one I might want to watch again. But I only gave it 6.0. So.
And his heart grew 3 times that day.
Fucking goddamn it. You're right. Son of a bitch. Son of a bitch.
This is a stoner comedy. I don't care what you say. It really is. It's dumb. It's silly. But there's some glue holding it all together. Relationships. I got nostalgic about my past to it. Whatever. This is the rewatchability here is once a year. I'm going to watch it every holiday season.
I love that. I love it.
I just am. I mean, I'm going to watch it every holiday season, and me and my wife will sit down and laugh our ass off when Seth Rogen's walking down the street and runs into Jesus talking to him.
So funny.
You know?
So funny.
So good. So it's there. I say watch it. I think it's underrated. I'll go as far as this, which Adam which Alan probably won't agree with. This is an underrated Christmas movie. Underrated. Severely.
Yeah, I don't agree with that.
The fact that you said you would watch it again, though.
I know. I'm a walking contradiction.
You really are.
Are you okay if we talk about your connection to that theater and the
I'll talk about
the film festival.
Whatever you want.
You were talking about how you're nostalgic for this because you were away from your family. You were working, you know, in LA by yourself, and you would go to the theater and you would watch movies.
It was a reprieve. I mean, there was a theater right across the street. I used to work at LA Film School right on Sunset Boulevard. There's an arc light. The Cinerama Dome, which is a very popular spot in LA, was right across the street. I saw this movie at that theater. And it was a month after I essentially left my family for
a minute.
Right?
That's a tough time in your life, right?
Yeah.
That would be, yeah, exactly. But it kind of came full circle recently where you just screened a short film that we've talked about a couple times that eventually once it's through the film festival circuit, we'll put it online or whatever and people will be able to see it. But you just screened a film at that theater, right? For the Culver City Film Festival.
It was a different one. The one I watched this at was different. But here's the thing about the LA move was I taught at the LA Film School moonlighting as an assistant editor cutting movie trailers in Culver City. And I would go from the teaching job to the editing job and just get back and forth. But on the way there, so this is not the Cinerama Dome. This is the one in Culver City. It was another theater there, the Culver Theater. And then there's another one in Marina Del Rey, which is not too far. So one of those two theaters I would go to, both Marina Del Rey or Culver City. Because they're pretty close to where I was moonlighting as an assistant editor. And yeah, so we just recently, and we got into both of those festivals, actually, Marina Del Rey and Culver City. And so I just recently went down there to California and watched a movie that I made in a theater that I used to watch movies in while I was moonlighting and just grinding away trying to figure out life and provide for your family, right? So it was pretty full circle. It was like, oh, yeah, remember when I used to come here to watch movies and now I'm watching my own movie in a theater of movies that I made. And it was a pretty cool experience.
To me, just as storytellers, like, that is a pretty fucking sweet. That, like, to me, that's like an incredible story to tell because you're alone. You're all alone in, like, a different, you know, different state without the people you love, just grinding it out and to be able to actually, like, return to that spot to showcase your work. To me, that is pretty fucking incredible. And I wanted to take a minute to talk about that just because I think that doesn't happen very often to people. And I think you should be proud of it because the film that you put together is incredible and it's outstanding. And I honestly can't wait for everyone to see it because it really is a fantastic short film.
I'm never good at receiving praise.
I know you're not.
Praise.
And that's why I'm doing it.
I'm the absolute worst at it. To be honest.
Because you insulted Bad Santa, so I'm trying to make you feel as uncomfortable as possible.
Well, go back and look at my score. The truth is revealed. We know I love Bad Santa.
I just want you to feel uncomfortable, that's all.
But yeah, it was a full circle moment. It was really cool. And it's cool to you know. But this ties me back. You know, you start thinking about, let me get overly sentimental here, but you start thinking about movies and even something like this, like The Night Before. And it's like, oh, there's a reason I resonate with the movie the way I do. And it's always kind of going to resonate. And I'm going to watch it over and over and over every year, once a year.
Yep.
During the holidays. And I would say, go check it out. It's everywhere. It's on Netflix. It was on Netflix. It's on Amazon. It's on every place you can get it. And if you like Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt, go check it out. Movies resonate with people. That's the whole idea. That's the whole concept of it all is hopefully, and that's a hard thing to do.
It is. It absolutely
is. Because here we are like breaking down movies and we're always apologists to some degree because we understand that filmmaking is not easy. And it's okay to shit on things too. It's like if you didn't like it.
I know, but I will say like it's hard. Like I get to a point where, because now I've made a couple things. You've made a lot of things. Like, it's really fucking hard.
Really
hard. It is really hard to make anything. And I feel bad shitting on things if I don't like them. But also, it doesn't mean that, like, the filmmaker's a bad person or the people who like it are bad people.
It's not a personal attack.
It's just, like, it just didn't hit me.
This is a podcast. It's all business. It's not personal.
That's right. Just like The Godfather. But that is why, honestly, that's why I like to do this show, because movies mean a lot to me. Like, a lot. And I know they mean a lot to you.
I was thinking about that on the way in. Which for me, Alan, this is cathartic.
Yes, I agree.
I don't look, and I'm not knocking you. If you do therapy and do all that, I think that's great and you should do that. I don't do that. So this is a place for me to have that therapy where I can talk to someone who feels the same way I do about the things that I feel about, which is, it could be dumb, but it's not. It's movies. Like, who doesn't resonate with movies? It's a cultural thing. It's a thing that everybody on some level resonates with.
Yes.
In their own way.
Yep.
And so this is really nice for me, and it's cathartic.
Yeah.
And there's a conversation there, and it's okay to disagree. And guess what? Alan's wrong, and I'm right.
Not this time. Usually that's true. Not this time. Okay. Well, I think that's a good place to stop. Congratulations on the film. Cameron was a Red Wings fan.
Thanks for bringing it up.
It's fantastic, and we'll share a lot more of that as we go along.
For sure.
Okay, head over to tameaperture.com and listen to all the old episodes. Hit us up. Let us know how right I am on this one, and we will see you next time.
The Tame Aperture podcast is produced by Dutch Angle Pictures in association with Studio B Productions. Listen, watch, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and YouTube.